Welcome to another episode of Compressed, a podcast where we talk all about web design and development with a little bit of zest. In today's episode, we are going to be talking to Brad Garapi. He's going to be my co-host, all about Remix. Hello, my name is Amy Dutton, and I'm the Director of Design at Zeal.
Hey, y'all. I'm Brad Garapi. I work on the Trello front-end platform at Atlassian.
Web development and design, who would have guessed? Well, we can do them both, even add a little zest. So turn up the volume, get ready for the best. Let's get it started in this episode of Compressed.
Today, we have two fabulous sponsors with Hashnode and Daily.dev. Hashnode is a wonderful blogging platform that not only makes it easy to get a blog up and running quickly, but has a wonderful community that will get more eyeballs on your work faster, helping you grow your own community. And Daily.dev is a browser extension that will help you stay up to date on all the latest and greatest news within the tech industry. It's very easy to install and recommendations are tailored specifically to you. So more from each of these sponsors later in the show. Brad, what have you been up to?
I had just like a very social past couple days. I got to meet up with some local developers in Austin, some ex-coworkers, some friends, some family. I feel like, you know, all I did was like socialize. So I feel like right after this podcast, I'm going to like climb into my coding hole and just come out in a couple days.
Oh man, are you an introvert or an extrovert?
I would say I'm pretty extroverted, but I feel like after so much of it, you're just like, man, I just need to like sit in front of a computer. It just feels good. It feels like home.
I ride the line of introvert, extrovert. But I'm more on the introvert side. So if I do a lot of things, I've usually got to find some time for myself. Like you're talking about just sitting in front of a computer coding.
Recharge time.
I was going to say, it's ironic that you were talking about being social. So we actually went out twice this weekend, which is living life on the edge. So Henry and I celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary. So we went to a nice restaurant in downtown Nashville. And then Saturday night, we went to a comedy show. So if you've heard of Angela Johnson, we went and heard her. She packed out the Ryman twice because we had a show at 7 and then she had another show at 11. So it seats 2,300 people. So I'm like, that's a decent audience. This is probably more on the female comedy side, but her famous bit is from like 15 years ago, all about getting your nails done, where she's like, hey, do you ever go to get your nails done? I went to a place called Glamour Nail, just one nail. That's the joke. But yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. We went with a bunch of friends.
That's awesome. Well, congrats on 10 years. And my wife and I really need to go visit Nashville. I feel like it would be a good extension of like our Texas country scene.
Yes. The thing is, it's changed so much. And Henry and I were talking because a lot of times we're not down there at night because we've both worked downtown before. And it's a completely different scene downtown. And it's a completely different scene on Broadway where you have all the honky-tonks. And
touristy, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So like we came out of the show and it's 10 and literally I saw two people just fall down in the middle of the street because they were so drunk. And I'm like, great. Represent.
Sounds a lot like Austin. Just a good time.
Well, and I've heard Austin is like Nashville except on steroids.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And I did college here too, which was just like even. That's when it's at its peak.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I am ready to hear all about Remix. So this is one of those frameworks that I feel like I've been watching. And then we had Kent on the podcast a few weeks ago. And the way that he talked about it got me really excited about it. So I feel like I'm just looking for a project that I can use to experiment with this framework.
Yeah, I actually kind of just started picking it up. So I'm in the right headspace for it. I've got like some ideas for new applications I want to build. And I said, this is always a good time to pick up something new. Let's get another JavaScript framework. Although Remix doesn't feel like a JavaScript framework. And we'll kind of get into why. But, you know, I do the usual thing that I do anytime I'm learning a new framework. I create my starter. I create my snippets, my plop generators, all those cool things. And then make like a template app.
I love that you did that. Actually, James and I were talking when we celebrated our 100th episode. That was probably one of the most influential episodes for me because it totally transformed my workflow and got me all into plop. And so I spin up all kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm like absolutely religious about that stuff because I just want it to feel easy to replicate every other time.
Yeah. So we'll include a link to that particular episode in the show notes.
Yeah, so I wrote a blog post summarizing what I thought about Remix. And so a lot of this episode, I'll just kind of be working through it and talking about the high level features and just why it feels different than the other frameworks I've worked in before. What's your experience level with Remix, Amy?
So, like I said, we had Kent on the podcast. I started to watch Scott Talinsky's course on Level Up Tutorials because he has one on Remix. And I watched it enough to be like, okay, here's the folder structure. Here's kind of how things are handled. But I didn't get far enough to, one, finish the course and also start another project. And I feel like when I actually build a project is really when that information gets solidified, when I work through error messages and I think, okay, this is what I want to do. How would I make this happen? I feel like that's when I really know something.
Yeah, I would say the magic in Remix, and we'll just kind of get into the features here, comes from its loader function and its action function. For the most part, Remix feels pretty similar to other frameworks today. They've got the file-based nested routing that's all built on top of React Router, but Remix offers this loader function and action function.
The guy that created Remix, he also created React Router like years ago, right? So
yeah, maybe we should do a little history lesson. Yeah.
Okay, that's the extent of my history that I know.
Yeah, so the creators of Remix, their names are Ryan Florence and Michael Jackson. They created React Router, which is like really, really popular inside of single page applications when you just need to kind of like, for this URL, render this component and you're handling all your navigation on the client side. They were also doing a side business called React Training where they were doing in-person React workshops. COVID hit, things happened, in-person training got less popular, so they needed to find a way to like monetize what they were doing. And so they had this idea to build on top of React Router, a framework. And eventually, you know, it started out as paid and now it's open source. They hired on Kent to evangelize it for the past year. And, you know, here we are now where Kent did a good job of like showing people that Remix is a really good way to build applications.
Yeah, I do remember. So Remix was sponsorware at the beginning, which is a really interesting model. And I know a lot of people were watching that particular model to say, okay, is this a viable way to create open source, even though it's sponsorware? And then one of the things that surprised me when we had Kent on the episode was he was saying that he is considered a partner. So he's not just an employee. He's really a partner of the team. But anyways, it impressed me that Kent believes in it enough to become a partner and not just, okay, I want to talk about Remix.
Yeah, and I'm definitely on the hype train. I don't think I've bought into a hype train as much as Remix.
Wow. I wanted to take a brief minute to talk about Hashnode. So Hashnode makes it easy to start a blog in seconds on your own custom domain for free. It's fully optimized for developers and supports writing in Markdown, rich embeds, publishing from a GitHub repository, syntax highlighting, and edge caching with Next.js blogs deployed on Vercel. On top of this, your article gets instant readership from the growing community. James and I have talked before on the podcast about how valuable creating content is and how developing an online presence really does give you respect and credibility in the tech space. And really, there's no better way to do that than through Hashnode. So be sure to go to hashnode.com and join the community. Special thanks to Hashnode for being a Compressed FM sponsor. Yeah, so the first thing that you have listed in your notes is nested routing. And the thing that surprised me about this, so I know that Next.js and Remix were going back and forth on nested routing for a while. And like Next came out and said, hey, we're going to do this. They haven't released it yet. There's a fantastic blog post that we can release in the show notes where Remix came out and said, this is our reasoning for it. To me, they handled competition in the best way possible because they actually ran it past the Next.js team, allowed them to respond and even correct things before releasing this article. So it's a really well-written article. But I think what surprised me about it is I feel like in some ways I have nested routing with other applications because I will put components inside of components. But this is different, right? Than just saying a sidebar inside of a layout, right?
Yeah, and I think this is really all because Remix kind of started or grew out of React Router, which had that same notion. You map a URL to a specific component or set of components. Other frameworks have different names for this. You have like an outlet, or you can think of it as children, where you insert the nested route at this specific position of your current route. Mm-hmm. And so really what it is, a mapping of URL segments to different components on the front end.
Oh, interesting. So it's not even like you have a layout file with all these other pieces, you're actually mapping a component to a route.
To a route, yes. Okay. So imagine, I'll kind of compare to Next.js and baseline there. If you're trying to render a specific page in Next.js, that top level file is responsible for rendering everything in the page top down. Mm-hmm. And if any part of the URL changes, you go back to the very top and render the entire new URL from the top down, even if it's just a sub URL of a specific portion.
Sure. You just have nested components, not nested routes.
Correct. Okay. So Remix is smart enough to say, oh, only this portion of the URL changed, which means only this portion of the DOM is going to change. Well, we'll just swap that out for the new portion. So this works really well for applications that have, let's say, a left-hand sidebar. And maybe in the left-hand sidebar, let's say it's like a workout application. You've got your exercises, your foods, and your weight. That's the left-hand sidebar. So that's like maybe rendered on every page.
Okay.
So let's say you click on your exercises, and now you have like a center portion of the application with all your different types of exercises, your back exercises, your leg exercises. And each time you click on one of those, the center content of those tabs changes. And so you can view each piece of that directly connected to a portion of the URL, and each individual piece, Remix is able to fetch the data for that one portion and then re-render that specific component that is slotted to go into that outlet, is what they call it.
Interesting. Now, I think when I've heard Scott talk about this, Scott Talinsky, he said that one of the benefits to this is you can create some really beautiful transitions because all of that information is persistent on the page. Is that accurate, or am I...
Yes. So this isn't something I've been able to implement yet, but React offers this hook called use transition. And what this hook does is it tells you like what's happening. Did you just submit a form? Are you trying to navigate? And it gives you some information about the transition. And so then on your client side, yeah, you could probably do something like animate or show. I guess you really don't need a spinner, but do something on the front end. It's swapped between those two components. But I said, like, I haven't actually gotten to that point yet.
Okay, cool. So as we're talking about routing, explain to me how links work. I know if we're comparing it Next.js and Remix, Next.js has always had this really weird link component where you have to have a link wrapping an A tag, and the link that has the href on it, but the A tag doesn't. And you have to know when to use which one, and it can get a little confusing.
Yeah.
I think Remixes, you even have an open a package, right?
I do. I have a package that like intelligently just like adds the A tag, and it differentiates between internal and external links. None of that with Remix. But what I've found is as I've been building with Remix, I haven't had the urge to create all the packages around, you know, the framework that I usually do. So Remix's link is just a link with a capital L, and that's it. It's very, very, very simple. They also offer a nav link, which provides you with an active class on the particular link that's active. What's really cool about those is that you can use regular old HTML attributes like prefetch on them to like prefetch when you hover a link, and then it will go out and fetch that data so that when the user actually gets around to clicking on a link, it's like super fast because it did it like a couple hundred milliseconds before the click actually occurred.
Very cool. Yeah, Kent was sharing some of the stats for speed. And to be honest, some of it was over my head. It was enough to be like, wow, that's impressive and fast. I don't know what it means. Good. Yeah, good job.
It's like remarkably faster, at least during development, than anything else I've worked with.
Really? Okay. So is that just like navigating the site, or is that also like when I've been developing in SvelteKit, I've been really impressed by Vite and how fast it is. Like by the time I go to the browser, all those changes have already been implemented.
Yeah, reloading is really fast too, for sure. Yeah. But there's another links that Remix offers. It's not just like a link component. There's also this links function. So a lot of what you'll see in Remix is in your route components, you have like the React component that's supposed to be rendered, but there's also like some associated functions. For instance, mapping to Next.js, you've got your get static props and get server side props and all those other type of ones. Mm-hmm. Remix offers these functions at a route level called links, meta, loader, and action. Okay. And these are kind of like all the things associated with a particular route. So this links one is like what link tags are loaded on the page. So if you need to fetch some specific CSS for this specific route, you can do that. Or, you know, you need to go fetch like an SVG or anything you need to pull in, you can do. And why that is cool is because they're just functions. So you can actually compose link functions to call other link functions and get that nested feel to your links. So this means, like, let's say you're swapping out the main content of the page and each portion has different link functions associated with it and they require different CSS files. It'll actually unload one CSS file and then pull in the next CSS file.
Interesting.
So it's not scoped per se, but only the CSS that is required to render for that route is on the page at any time.
Okay. Now, I guess now would be a good time to say that Remix is all server side, whereas something like Next.js, you can control whether that's client side or server side.
Yes, that's right.
Or it's statically generated. It's like the third one. Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is where I started getting rubbed the wrong way by Next.js. They give you,
like, careful, you know, they're a sponsor.
Okay. Next is very flexible. They give you an overwhelming amount of choices about how to render your page. Is it rendered server side? Is it rendered client side? Is it statically generated? Is it statically generated at an interval? A million different ways to get that initial set of data for your application. Remix kind of says, no. Everything is run server side. And I appreciate that for simplicity because you know where your code is running. You know that when you're running your loader and your action, which are two of those functions at a route level, that code is running on server side. You can talk to your database. You can create cookies. You can do all the server side stuff. And you don't have to worry that anything is going to bleed over to the client side.
One of the things that I've noticed, so the compressed site is statically generated. And we are doing that for speed purposes. But when you have something like Remix saying, no, we're fast, or no, we're faster, then it's like, why bother statically generating your site when you can have those same speed benefits? The other side of it is anytime we make a change to the site, we have to rebuild it. And that can be frustrating. Whereas if it's on the server, you're always going to have the most recent set of data.
Yeah. So Remix's philosophy isn't like do a bunch of work ahead of time. They're like, hey, the web has evolved. We have edge runtimes that can execute this stuff so fast. And not to mention, the web supports caching. So if we leverage the platform to do a lot of this stuff, we can achieve pretty much the same speed as a pre-built site without all of the overhead, all the build time stuff. And, you know, it eliminates a lot of the choice. It just says deploy to an edge network and you're going to get really good speeds, even though we're doing all the work on the server because the server is now co-located with the users or close to the users.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, as you're talking about these different pieces, links, metadata, and the loader, all that is within the same file. It's not like you have a separate server file. Okay, so that would be a difference with SvelteKit. With SvelteKit, you have to have like a plus page.server file, and then you have a plus page file. So you can control where the code is running based on what file it's located in.
Yeah, that's the convention. Loader, and you don't have to follow that convention. Your loader and action functions can be placed anywhere, but they have to be exported from your route file because that's how it connects this route to its data loading function and its data mutation function. So the loader function loads data for the initial render. The action function does data mutation.
Okay.
This is a different concept, I feel like, because let's say with Next.js, they give you a ton of flexibility on how you load your data and how you generate your page. But the rest of that life cycle is up to you. What happens if you want to submit a form or change some of your data? Next says, I don't know, pick one of these 10 different libraries that there are. SWR, React, Query, Apollo, however you want to do it, that's up to you. By the way, handle all your loading and error states as well, you know? Remix actually fills in this second half of development. When you're making a real application, loading is just half of the problem. The second half is how do I make changes to what I see on the page? And here Remix really uses the platform. They say use the form element, the form tag, and that's how we send data off to the server in the action function. So
standard HTML.
right. Like forms have a method. Typically, you want to do a post if you want to edit data, and then in like an action, you can point it to different URLs. That action by default is set to the current route that you're in. So because you have an action exported from the same route, it's tied together. That's how they know to associate that. So what's kind of weird is like on some pages, you can do lots of different actions. Like let's say you have a to-do list. You want to be able to delete each to-do or maybe like check it off as complete or maybe like change its name. Those are all separate forms. And so each form says, hey, this is what I do. I delete. This other form's like, okay, I control the is completed attribute. And so you have multiple forms and your action has to handle each action that you can do.
Okay, so that just caused my brain to twist a little bit. So normally if I had a to-do, I wouldn't necessarily have a form. I might on the input. You might have the buttons on there, but they're not like a true submit button. It might just be a button. So here you're saying that each thing has to be, each set of functionality has to be wrapped in a form element, form tag.
Yes. Okay. Now, Remix doesn't stop you from making a bunch of, you know, client calls and fetch calls from the client to change your data. No, but they say, hey, if you want to take advantage of our router and all the cool stuff it can do for you, you should leverage forms. Okay. So think about it like this. Instead of when you click the trash can on a to-do item to delete it, you would have to like write JavaScript that says on click, make this Ajax call, make sure to show the loading state, and then get the response back and then update the UI on the page. Remix says, no, it's actually a page load. You submit a form and in your server, you handle the deletion of the to-do and it re-renders, reloads with new information. And without JavaScript, it is a full page reload. But Remix also supports JavaScript, so it can work completely without or use it to progressively enhance. And so if you change the lowercase f in form to an uppercase f in form, Remix will only reload that particular nested route that you have with the new data. So you're not fetching everything and not doing a full page reload.
Okay, because you started talking, I was like, oh, if I hit delete and a to-do item every time, my page is going to refresh. That sounds awful.
Yeah. So like, but it's if your JavaScript bundle failed to load or like had an error, your entire page still works.
Yeah. That way everything doesn't fall over.
Kind of amazing. Yeah. So the Remix also teaches you that forms have can have hidden inputs. So if you need to pass additional data along with your inputs, like let's say the ID of the to-do isn't tied to an input, you can have a hidden input with the ID or a hidden input saying, hey, this form is going to run the delete action. Then inside of your action function, you can say, okay, if this form is the delete form, perform these DB operations with the data in the form.
Okay, interesting. Let me, hopefully I'm not going down a path that you're not ready for. So when you're dealing with inputs, you have to do some crazy stuff in React to get those inputs to work. Does Remix give you different inputs or does it handle inputs differently?
So in React, React wants everything to be tied to state.
Right.
So that it can control rendering of everything. But
yes,
HTML inputs don't need that. You can type in them and they work just fine. So only in the React, you have to do that on change stuff.
Yes, which is miserable. I always reach for a library.
You don't have to do that anywhere. Even in a normal React application, you can just pull the values right out of the input. If you really want to like add JavaScript to do some really cool like validation as the user's typing into the input, you can totally implement what you're used to in a React application. But Remix doesn't really use that. You have the ID of the form, and you can use that to grab the values and send it in a regular request object. And that's where this use the platform thing comes in. Forms have inputs, which have values and an associated button to submit. All of that can be bundled up into a request and sent off to the server. So what's really cool is if you ever want to test your action or your loader function, you do new request and, you know, create the object that simulates your delete request or your add request and run it through the action function and see if the response matches what you would expect. And that is like at its purest form using the platform. Those are the things that get passed from your client to server. And you're just saying, hey, run the action on the server. Did I get back what I expected?
Wow. So do you find that you're writing more or less code with Remix?
I find that I'm writing HTML. I'm actually writing less React, less use effect, less state. I'm actually creating less components because if you think about it, let's say you're doing like a Next.js application and you need to like make a header component and it has to get pasted on every page, or, you know, you have your layout file, which has the header. But what Remix does is because of the nested routing, you only have to define things once if you're nesting properly, right? So it's included in the hierarchy. So you don't actually have to take a copy of a component and stick it in many different locations. The hierarchy of the nested routes take care of that for you. So I actually find that like, I don't need to create React components. And if I am doing it, I'm just doing it so that like the HTML that I write gets shorter so that it's easier to reason about. Mm. There's actually no need to split that off because it's not actually being used anywhere else.
Okay. So are your URLs longer so that it can account for all the different layouts and nesting?
I will say like you can build a specific type of layout that works better with Remix. You know, so like you'll see the example on their homepage. It's like an invoices application, and just the way they have the navigation broken out, it lends itself to nested routing. But there's nothing stopping you from just saying like, this is a page. There is nothing nested in here. Boom, I spit everything out. But if you look at a website, there are definitely common elements, you know, even a standard blog, you've got your header and like the little sidebar thing with the most recent posts and a search bar. And then the main content, every website has a structure that it typically follows.
Yeah. So as you're talking about forms, there are several different form states that you have to account for, like errors. So how do you manage those?
Yeah, this I will say was a little bit weird for me to wrap my head around. You know, in React, you are actively monitoring everything that's getting typed into a form, and you can kind of run that validation on the client side. But on Remix, what happens? Everything has to run through your action on the server side first. So what your action kind of has to do is take in the form inputs, determine if they're valid. And let's say something's not valid. Let's say it's a username and password form and like the password's not correct and you want to tell the user specifically your password's not correct. You actually send back down an object that maps to your form values. And you know this because every input has a name. So you just create an object with a name and its associated value that the user sent from the request. And then you can kind of almost duplicate that object under a property called like form errors. So you've got a form with a username and password, you send that back. And then there's another property with a username and password under it. And you can say like in the username field, there's no error, it's all good, it's null. In the password field, this password is incorrect. So when you pass that back down to the client, you can now look, okay, does this specific input have an entry in the errors object? If not, it's fine. If yes, render like a span underneath the input. So the original data almost makes a full circle from client to server back to client in order to say, okay, here are my input errors and this is what they're associated with.
Got it.
So another way that Remix handles errors are with these boundary components, and they've got two of them. They've got a catch boundary and an error boundary. And a catch boundary, what its job is to catch expected errors. So what this means is like, let's say you're running a loader for a specific route and your user, you know, isn't signed in and they don't actually have the ability to view the page. You could actually throw a response object. And Remix actually has the ability to like catch it and render different UI for that. So like these are expected errors. Catch a 400 and render the login form. So instead of redirecting to a login page, let's say, you could actually like use a catch boundary to say, you're not authenticated. I'm going to show you this UI instead. Or the operation that you wanted to do on this to-do, was incorrectly formed or isn't right, I'm going to render a completely different UI instead.
That's nice.
And then the error boundary is for when things go like completely haywire and your server just like falls over. You can actually just render an error boundary and be like, oops, some things broke, you know, and then you kind of like redirect them somewhere else, tell them to click SOL. A link or yeah. Yeah. That's the last resort.
Funny. So what are some of the areas that you've been frustrated with Remix that you've thought, oh man, this is actually easier to do a different way? Or maybe another framework fills in that gap that you kind of miss.
So one of the kind of weird things about Remix is just how they do their CSS, how they do styling methodologies. Because of nested routing and the links function that I talked about earlier, each route and subroute kind of declares what CSS they need, let's say. But let's say you have like some components in there that you want to share between routes. You have to like bubble their CSS up to the closest parent route or subroute. That's kind of difficult because like now you're trying to keep track of, well, I rendered my newsletter sign up here, here, and here, which is like one of the use cases that doesn't fit into nested routing because that little component could go in many places. And it has CSS associated with it. So I have to now add that to the links function. And keeping track of all that is like kind of difficult.
Okay. Now, does Tailwind help with any of that?
Tailwind is kind of the perfect solution for Remix because at the end of the day, Tailwind is one generated CSS file that is applicable literally everywhere. And you can load it at the root and it's not very wasteful. Like imagine if one of your sub routes didn't use one of the utility classes that Tailwind provided. That's like two lines of CSS, like whoop-de-doo. It's not going to add to your, you know, overall bundle size or your transfer size. So Tailwind is the solution that I wound up using with Remix because I just think it pairs so well with load the CSS once, you can cache it for pretty much ever unless you're really changing these utility classes. And you don't have to worry about all the nested layout stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, actually, as I asked that, I remember Kent talking about it on the episode that he was on. And the thing that he said that I was like, oh, yeah, that is right, was with Tailwind, you're locked in basically to a CSS size. No matter how big your site gets, you're never going to keep tacking on CSS. Like you are locked into a size because you have all the utility classes that are already provided on the front end.
Right. There's an upper bound.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although you'll never hit it. Like you'll never wind up using every utility class.
Right, right. So, I mean, I guess in some ways when you count purge in, your CSS file is going to grow. But the point is most traditional applications where you're writing custom CSS with every layout, every component, you're always adding more CSS. And then you have situations, of course, where you might rip out the component, leave the CSS behind. So you end up getting these really bloated CSS files where Tailwind, you're locked in.
Yeah. And then like Tailwind just has super good developer experience with the VS Code plugin. And it's just, I think it's a really easy choice here because and that's kind of how I do CSS. When a framework has a solution that fits really well with it, like for me, it was CSS modules and Next.js, that's what I would go with. And now Remix pairs well with Tailwind. That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah. What are some other things?
I would say another thing that is maybe a con, but definitely a pro about Remix is, you know, now you're working with web primitives like form data or the request and response object. And sometimes they can feel a little funny, you know, because they're older, right? And you may not know those APIs. And so you're like, wait. How do I get data out of a form? So you have to run to MDN to figure that out. And you'll realize that some of it can be clunky. But at the end of the day, you're learning the web platform. You're like beefing up your knowledge. And now that's completely transferable.
Yeah, that's very cool. What have you done for authentication? Because I think that's been one of the things that still leaves me starry-eyed about Redwood is that it has an authentication solution that you can kind of use out of the box. Makes it super easy to spin up. But when I did Next, I ended up reaching for Auth0.
Yeah, so authentication is something I've struggled with for a really long time. And let me tell you, Remix has the best tutorials out there, hands down. They're in written and video form, and all their tutorials cover like real, like full stack applications with authentication. And like no other framework teaches you as much as Remix does in their tutorials.
Is that Kent?
That's Kent. Yeah, that's all thanks to Kent. And unfortunately, Kent's going to be departing Remix to go work on his epic web.dev projects. So yeah, like all that awesome stuff that he did is going to live on, but we can't expect any more, unfortunately.
His authentication system, is that like kind of build your own authentication, or is that using other systems?
It taught me authentication from scratch, cookie-based authentication from scratch. Wow. And you know what? No matter how much I tried NextAuth or Auth0 or all these other providers, Clerk was one of the better ones, though, I will say that. Like, nothing taught me as much as what he did. Like, because when you use these other providers, you still have to find ways to, like, integrate it into your application. And this may just be, like, Next.js, but, like, I always found it hard to, like, you have to be authenticated in your API routes, and you have to find ways to do authentication in Git server-side props, and you have to find ways to check if you're authenticated on the client side. And your brain kind of explodes because everywhere there's a slightly different API or methodology to check and see if you're authenticated. This is a client-server application, a server-rendered application. It's so much easier to be like, I have a cookie, and if the cookie's there, you know, you're good. Again, the cookie's getting passed back and forth between every request and response. And so you have those request response objects. You can just grab the cookie out of it and validate what you need to validate. Like, that's your source of truth. And it just travels with your application through the network. And man, it was just so straightforward to understand. And now I like feel like I have a much better grasp on authentication after doing these Remix tutorials.
Well, that makes sense why being server-side would simplify that whole process. You're not having to check for all these other use cases.
Yeah, and things can get more complicated. I know Scott Talinsky, when he teaches his like fundamental authentication courses, he stuffs a JWT inside of a cookie. And so now you're giving your client flexibility to send that JWT token anywhere you need to send it. If you need to authenticate from the client side to different services and things like that. But that's like a layer of complexity. In this case, it was kind of as simple as you can go email password authentication, no like password reset and stuff, but it gives you the foundation to say, okay, I can do this.
Nice. So what did you do for a database solution? Because you're going to have to store that username and password somewhere.
Yeah, one thing I really like is that a lot of the Remix tutorials use SQLite. So there's no overhead on getting a database set up. And if you're not familiar with SQLite, which I wasn't at the time, it's a file-based database. So it's just a file on your machine that persists, you know, data from your application. You can actually deploy those in production apps, but typically you'll want to go for something more like Postgres or MySQL when the time comes. But I found that for learning purposes and like scaffolding your dev environment, SQLite was the best. I will be looking into Postgres when I'm going to really deploy applications.
Okay. And then for your modeling, are you using anything like Prisma with it? I think Prisma is in one of their stacks.
Yeah. And so like, I think all these questions that you're asking like are perfectly directed at Remix stacks, which is like just a really good thing they offer out of the box. There are stacks with all these different technologies hooked together. So a SQLite database with Prisma, with authentication, with their Tailwind and everything you could ask for, even a deployment strategy to fly.io or, you know, Vercel or anything like that. They have these pre-made stacks where you can clone it and you already have like pretty much a full application, authenticated, persisted application up and running in like one command. And not to mention, you can make your own stacks, and the community has made a bunch of custom stacks. And I think this is like more powerful than something like Create T3 app or Create Next app or anything like that, because this is a full solution handed to you.
Interesting. I wanted to take a brief minute to talk about daily.dev. First, I think we all recognize how hard it is to stay up to date with the latest and greatest within the tech community. But there are resources like daily.dev that provide a community-based feed of the best developer news, helping you stay current. Daily.dev aggregates hundreds of sources every few minutes and creates a personalized feed just for you according to your interests. So whether that's web dev, data science, or Elixir, anything you might be interested in, it has content for you. There is a web version of the product if you want to see exactly what the feed looks like. Otherwise, just go over to daily.dev and there's a link directly on the homepage to install their extension within your browser. From there, anytime you want to load a new tab, you'll see the news feed. James and I both have it installed and use it to stay current ourselves, and so should you. So go check it out at daily.dev. Special thanks to daily.dev for being a Compressed FM sponsor. So what are some of the things that people have reached for in terms of testing?
Yeah, so a lot of the testing technology is pretty standard. You've got Cypress for more of your end-to-end style tests. Mm-hmm. You've got VTest for your unit tests. But I will say I ran into some snags in testing. VTest is great for testing like your utility functions or your loaders and actions independently because the inputs and outputs are so clearly defined. But in Next.js, you could test an entire Next.js route component. Whereas in Remix, Remix's router has its hands everywhere and they don't have a good like mock router solution yet. So if you try to render like the, a particular route component, they're going to be like, oh, you have to render this inside of a Remix router. Mm. And then the complexity builds and really Remix needs to offer like a first party solution for a mock router or something like that in order to make integration tests possible.
I see.
But typically they defer to be like, don't test page components, test your loaders and actions and utility functions specifically, and then hop over to Cypress in order to test end to end.
Yeah.
But I ran into troubles with Cypress too, actually.
Really?
Shortly before I tried it, React 18 dropped, and Cypress was having troubles with the React 18 hydration model. And so I kind of YOLO ripped out all the tests for my starters and application template. And I really need to add that back in once those things get settled.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you're not familiar with all the testing vocabulary, let me just take a quick step back. I can explain some of that stuff. So unit test is what it sounds like. You're just going to test a small unit of information. So this is great if you have, say, a money helpers function or you have a tiny component and you just want to see if something is available in that component. An integration test, you're checking to see how those components are integrated and working together. So as Brad mentioned, if you had a route that you're trying to load to make sure that all the information on that particular route is loading in the way that it wants. So it's using multiple components. And then end-to-end is the holy grail of testing because you're really testing your application the way that a user would use your application. And people like Kent, whenever they talk about testing, they say that's really how you should test because your user doesn't really care whether you're passing in a prop or whether a class name exists. What they care about is how they're using it and being able to interact with it. And that's what end-to-end provides. So that's some of those buzzwords. And then Cypress is kind of known as one of the best platforms for being able to do end-to-end testing. Playwright's another. Playwright actually comes with SvelteKit, so it'll be kind of interesting to see how Playwright and Cypress push each other towards a better solution. So as we were talking about testing, kind of at the base level is linting and formatting. So you can catch so many errors that you don't necessarily have to write tests for because ESLint or Prettier will catch that and fix it for you. So did you have any issues with linting and formatting related to Remix?
No, I had no issues with linting or formatting at all. It's ESLint and Prettier, so very standard. TypeScript support is also there, which is really, really cool. So like all of the data that goes in and out of your loaders and actions is fully typed. And then you use that data on the client side with these hooks, like use loader data is a hook that says like, on the client side, give me the data that came from the loader. And you can infer the type of your loader in the response. So yeah, it's fully type safe on the server side and on the client side, which is super helpful in development.
That's nice. So were there any other frameworks that you reached for when it came to data loading and mutations?
Not at all. Like Remix really has that nailed down. And I think that's why I felt so productive working in it. All that glue code between the HTML that you write, all that JavaScript that you have to do in other frameworks just goes away.
Okay. Because you're just using the web API.
You write the HTML form and then your action, which is boom, server code. Nothing else happens on the client. I think it makes development really, really, really fast.
So once you have your application built, where have you been deploying it to?
Yeah, so my place of choice is Vercel.
Excellent.
But Remix is interesting because it's just a web server and it can run in like a lot of different environments. So they actually have adapters for all these different environments that you can deploy it to. And like we were saying earlier, the web infrastructure has gotten really, really good. And this can run in all these fancy edge runtimes. So it can run on Cloudflare or Dino or Vercel or probably Netlify or AWS or all these different places. And so they have adapters for each one of these deployment targets. And it makes it very portable based on where you want to deploy. And so Vercel is a great option because it has an edge network and it puts the executable code close to your user. And I think that's what's part of what makes Remix really fast.
Did I remember reading somewhere that Remix is working on their own hosting platform?
Ooh, I did not know
I
that.
I think I read that because I think that was one of the ways that they were planning on monetizing. Because when they open source, like made everything true open source, remove the sponsor option from Remix, they had to have some way to pay for all of this. Like you have to, they have investors, but they have to have some way to promise investors, we're going to make money off of this. Right. And I think that hosting was how they said, we'll make money by people hosting their applications with us.
That could be cool.
I'm wondering if I just made this up.
There's got to be a plan to monetize. I just don't, I have no idea what it is.
I'll have to check that. So don't take my word for it. Okay, awesome. So one of the projects that I've been entertaining putting on Remix is my personal site. And that's another great reason I have a personal site is because it becomes a great playground for you to be able to experiment with all these frameworks. But one of the things that I'm looking to do with the next iteration of my site is to put Markdown and MDX on it. And I think I saw in the documentation that Remix supports Markdown and MDX out of the box. Is that, I know there's a section for it in the docs, but I wasn't sure if there was more to it than that.
I didn't realize that it supported out of the box. I'd be surprised if it did, honestly, though.
Yeah, so here I'm on their documentation. Remix has built-in support for using MDX in at build time in two ways. You can use a .mdx file as one of your route modules, or you can import .mdx as one of your route modules.
Oh, that's sick. I was actually thinking about migrating my blog to Remix, and I was like, yeah, but like I literally just migrated it this year to Next.js, and the Markdown piece was like literally the hardest part. And so this could make life even easier.
Yeah, so MDX is surprisingly frustrating to work with sometimes if you're trying to get it up and running by yourself. And I've even run into it with SvelteKit, which has
MD specs.
Thank you. And even though that support is kind of there almost out of the box, it's still very frustrating to deal with.
Well, and you know, here's the thing. People who say that they support Markdown and MDX, yes, they render it to HTML for you or a React component or whatnot. What they don't do is apply transforms. So like a lot of the tough stuff on my website was doing all the custom things I needed to do to my Markdown to transform, an H1 into something different or render an image differently because I was using Next.js and I needed their image component. And some of those transforms can happen on the server and some have to happen on the client if you're transforming it to a React component. So it can get wildly complicated in that sense. But the fact that they like can do the base stuff for you, there's got to be like a configuration file somewhere where you say, list out all the remark transforms you want to do to your Markdown before we send it off to your client. So at least you don't have to like scaffold the beginning bits out, but just your customizations. They need to support like, yep, there it is. Advanced configuration right down at the bottom of that page.
Okay.
So we're we started looking at the docs and we actually did find that their MDX support does allow you to specify all of your custom remark and rehype plugins that you would need to really customize your Markdown files for your blog. And I think that is definitely a baseline to claim Markdown support. And at this point, it's like, looks pretty straightforward.
And I do know Kent also released a package called MDX Bundler to help with some of these things. It says it's meant to compile and bundle your MDX files and their dependencies fast in all caps.
Nice.
Cool. So I know what I might be doing.
I don't think I've been to your website anytime recently.
Don't go.
Is this a new design?
So I have selfteach.me.
That's the one of mine.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't done a lot with it. It's currently running with Sanity and then Next.js on the front end. And I am using Tailwind. So one of the nice things about Tailwind is I've experimented with all these different frameworks and platforms, is that you can just copy those components over and all your styles come with it. So there's some stuff that I really, there's still bugs in it. Like I have it up right now that I'm like, oh, don't go there. I have big, big dreams and big plans for it. When it comes to the blog, I want to get all of my YouTube videos transcribed and posted as actual posts on the site. And I have a huge backlog of content that I'm just constantly thinking this would be really fun to share with the world. But right now the blog has links to pages that are probably broken and don't include anything. So you can look at it if you want, but I'm afraid you'll be sorely disappointed.
It's already better designed than my website. My website is like black text on white background. Classic.
But like the thing is, you know, you say that, that's all somebody really needs. You know, I look at my site and like we did a design episode where we said, and this is true, usually when you're designing, you only want to use like maybe two fonts. And some of it's a design choice. Like you want to limit those things so you don't have like word art and craziness happening on your site. But the other side of it is it's a performance issue. So on my site, I made an intentional decision to use like five fonts, which is fine. I can still stand behind it, but the performance of it, having to load all of that information, and there's a script font that I've used with that self-teach me, that's I think is a ping, but I have it below where it's latest posts, and because it has that kind of marker feel to it, that font is very heavy. From a performance perspective, it just has to have a lot of data in order to load. So it would be beneficial for me to revisit some of those things.
A performance tip though, you don't have to load every character in the font. Mm-hmm. You can use subsetting to say, hey, I only want, you know, latest posts. And then that should hopefully reduce size.
I need to look into that. I know that back in the day, Typekit, but it's now owned by Adobe Fonts used to be able to type in what characters you wanted to use.
Yeah. I've never used it either, but I'm just like, this is a great idea for things like fonts that are only used for headers or things like that. Yeah. Like you don't need all the characters.
And for anybody listening, the reason I made a big deal about Adobe is Brad used to work at Adobe.
I did. Yeah. I still miss it. Good people. I actually, you know, in my socializing over the weekend, I saw a bunch of Adobe folks on Thursday night. So that was fun.
Cool. Well, in the next section of the episode, we have grab bag questions. And this is where we ask questions from friends and strangers on the internet. Brad, I think you said one question came through.
Yeah. One question stuck out to me, and it's from Todd Libby.
He's so fun. I met him at Magnolia.js.
Yes. What framework that you worked on would you say is your favorite, and what about it appeals to you?
I
think it might be Remix.
Well, here, I have a good one. So I've really enjoyed working with SvelteKit lately. And some of it is because it does have that purist standpoint. Like I feel like I'm writing more HTML, I'm writing more CSS, I'm writing more vanilla JavaScript. So I'm really interested now to experiment with Remix, because a lot of the things that you talked about would still apply to Remix is the things that I like about SvelteKit.
Yeah, and I remember trying out Svelte for the first time, and it did feel... And it was mostly because the templating language was more HTML based. Mm-hmm. And you had to write a little bit less of that glue code as well, because they had that, like, what was that, two-way binding between, you know, variables used in your JavaScript and your templates. Yeah, and Remix is, it feels the same, but you are writing actually native HTML, which is awesome.
Yeah, I do love that two-way binding, but it's also gotten me in trouble in a couple of times because I'm not controlling the flow of data. That certain things that I would have expected to update didn't, and realizing, oh, I've got to do this a different way or push this a different way or save the data in a different location.
Mm. Yeah, actually, my sticking point was Svelte was stores. Like I was all into React Context at the time, and I couldn't quite figure out and get my head around how Svelte stores were very similar to Context. And feel like my Svelte days never took off, mostly just because like I had built so much tooling around React stuff that I was like, I don't want to chuck that all away. And which is good too for me, because like with Remix, a lot of the tooling that I have and the automation and stuff like that still applies.
Oh, that is nice. And then our last
actually
go ahead
go for it. Like tiny tidbit here. Remix is not intended to be React only forever. Mm. It will totally be able to support Svelte if you want to kind of try this magic of nested routing and loaders and actions with a different front end UI library.
I think somebody's already written something either for Svelte or Vue.
Really?
Remember. Yeah.
Like a community thing? Yeah, they were going to like officially support it later. But yeah, I think there's probably a lot of community stuff out there.
Yeah, I'm doing a quick Google search. It looks like there's a few hits. I don't know how solid or stable they are, but it might be worth looking into if you prefer a different framework. And then for our last segment of the show, we do picks and plugs. And this is generally something that we pick something we like and plug something that we've worked on. So, Brad, do you have any picks and plugs?
Yeah, I'll start with my pick. We have a pretty cool home gym. We're pretty into working out, my wife and I. And the one thing that we were missing was any kind of like a cable machine. You know, we've got all the dumbbells and the barbells and stuff, but we recently went to Costco. I'm doing a really good James Quick stand-in because he loves Costco.
He's so pleased.
And the best cable machine that I found was actually offered through Costco. Wow. And it's this Inspire Fitness SF3. That's like the model of it. But it's got two weight stacks as well as a Smith bar on it. And it like just barely fit in our garage, and it's actually perfect for our needs. So like I've been doing full workouts just on the cable machine because it just, I've been missing that, you know, not going into a real gym and having all the cable machines there.
Very cool. And then your plug?
Oh man, I'm going to be banging on this one for a while. YouTube.com/Brad Garapi. I'm getting close to 1,000 subs. I still need to get that watch time up, but I'm trying to get monetized here on YouTube. So go check out my web dev tutorials and tech talks and stuff on my YouTube channel.
Awesome. And I have no idea what I'm going to pick. Oh, I know what I'll pick. So I'm going to pick a Rubik's Cube. And the reason that I'm picking a Rubik's Cube is because I'm trying to learn how to solve this. James and I are going to be in London at Modern Frontend Live in November, and we're going to do a live contest between the two of us, like a speed contest between the two of us to see who can solve it first. So James has long claimed he can solve it within a minute, and I've solved it before, but it was like years ago and over like the course of probably 5 hours. So this will be fun trying to work on my Rubik's Cube speed game, but it'll be a fun thing to do live in London.
I think I used to know how to do it back in high school, you know, and we were just fidgeting. Yeah. There's like patterns you have to follow,
right?
Like if it needs to go here to here, you do the whatever.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to plug my YouTube channel as well. I'm trying to get better about posting. I still haven't posted in a while, but hopefully by the time this drops, we'll have some new content out there that I'm excited about. And actually, Brad, I do need to hit you up because I want to publish the audio player component that I have on the Compress site as a NPM package. We'll make sure I'm doing this the right way. So anyways.
Hey, it's still Hacktoberfest. We could collab and you know, do that. So
let's do it. You can get your 4 PRs.
Yeah.
On that. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Brad, for joining us this week. You're actually going to be the entire month of October recording.
That's wild. We got a bunch of episodes coming up too.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So if you like Brad, tweet at James, let him know. So in the next episode that Brad and I are recording together, we'll be doing TDD, which is test-driven development, talking all about testing. So hope you can join us. That's all we got.